Mythbusters Canada, brought to you by Denied Truth. In this presentation, we're going to discuss the Canadian government and the creation of the country of Canada, as well as discuss the legal system within Canada. The information presented here can be used to challenge any legal action that is brought before you. You could also use this to challenge income tax. In 1670, King Charles II of England formed a charter corporation, which eventually became known as the Hudson's Bay Company, or HBC. The charter comprised of 40% of what is now the Canadian landmass, and included much of what is currently the U.S. state of Minnesota and North Dakota. The Hudson's Bay Company was basically a Rupert land charter, and it was controlling 100% of the resources of the land for the fur trade, forestry, minerals, and waterways, and everything else. It was a full-on monopoly. Plus, they could make their own laws, and they could enforce them. All the members of HBC had to take an oath back to the king and or queen, as they still do today. Okay? The key solution, or the way to contest this back then as it is now, is to refute any laws that are repugnant to common law or the Bible. The kings and queens have sworn an oath on the 1611 King James Bible to be defenders of the faith, so whatever contracts they have entered into must not be repugnant to the common law. But if they are, and everyone still agrees to uphold them, the royals are exonerated. The truth of the matter is that the Queen has nothing to do with legal matters in Canada, as you will find out further along in this presentation. The Hudson's Bay Company was doing fine and operated successfully for several hundred years. Then one day in 1860, the monarchs back in England said to themselves, HBC people have a country where they can do whatever they want, make as much money as they want, and all they give them in return is some nebulous gift. But King Charles was never able to get out of this, as it was a contract that he had signed. And he took an oath on the 1611 King James Bible to uphold all of his contracts. If you take note and you go into a court, they always have you swear an oath on the Bible. So the Bible is recognized by the legal system. However, the legal system also hoodwinks people into thinking they have a Bill of Rights or a Constitution in Canada, and nothing can be further from the truth. In 1866-1867, the then ruling monarch, Queen Victoria, had a plan to get this charter back from the Hudson's Bay Company. She joined the provinces of Nova Scotia and New Brunswick with Upper and Lower Canada, and added a railroad. And then she formed a dominion called the British North America by passing this act. This act was known as the British North American Act, B&A Act. The British North American Act received royal assent on the 29th of March, 1867, and went into effect on the 1st of July, 1867. This act united the three separate territories of Canada, Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, into a single dominion called Canada. Provision was made for the other colonies and territories of the British North America to negotiate their way into the Union. The act divided the provinces of Canada at that time into Quebec and Ontario. A new federal government and parliament was established in Ottawa with the provincial government's legislatures. The act was established and the Dominion remains sovereign of the British North America and served as Canada's constitution until 1982. If you do a little research, you'll find out that the various provinces of Alberta and Saskatchewan and British Columbia and a few other places did not in fact all sign on at one time. So when they hoodwinked the people into thinking Canada is 150 some years old, that is actually incorrect. Because the last province to sign on to Canada didn't do so until the 1940s. I believe it was Alberta. The British North American Act 1867 can be seen here, at least the first couple of paragraphs of it, as well as the map of 1867. You can see that we do not have specific provinces in the western part of Canada. An Act of the Union basically came along here, and this is a photo of the provinces of Canada, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick have expressed their desire to be federally united into one. This means that the provinces had to actually sign on to become part of this Dominion of Canada. So, as I said in the previous slide, Canada didn't exist all as one unit all at one time. Now that we have two different corporate entities running side by side, the Dominion of British North America, called Canada, and the Hudson's Bay Company. Next, Queen Victoria demanded that Hudson's Bay Charter come back to the Queen. By making a country called British North America, the Queen forced HBC to be admitted into the newly formed country. Now, the HBC Charter was given back to Her Majesty for the price of 12 million pounds. Victoria got her piece of the paper, right? And the people of the land had to pay for it as usual. Some things never change. 31st of July 1868, HBC had to surrender their charter to the Queen and Her Majesty's successors and heirs in perpetuity, the Rupert's Land Act of 1868. I've also provided the link if you wish to follow it. The next thing that comes along is 1893 Statute Law Revision Act. And in this act, or in this document, we can see where certain things have taken place. Okay? And if we actually look at the Statute Revision Act, anytime we can find out if a law has been repealed or modified. If it's not in there and it's not repealed, then it's still on the books. What does all this mean? What it means is there is no act of parliament in Canada. There's no constitution and there's no de jure laws. The current Queen Elizabeth II at this time does not sign the laws into being in British Columbia, Canada. The Lieutenant Governor who represents the Queen also doesn't sign the laws. So therefore, if the Queen has no representative in Canada signing laws and the Queen herself doesn't sign the laws, the entire legal system of Canada is all a grand illusion, right? This office was created in 1871 and has served the crown ever since. However, because of the dissolving of the British North American Act, the Queen has nothing to do with Canada. In fact, if you look at section, I believe it's 92 of the Constitution of 1982, you'll find out that the Queen has nothing to do with legal matters in Canada. This means that anytime you step into a court and they have the monarch seal, if you will, at the front of the courtroom or somewhere in the court, you're actually stepping into a incorrect court, as that court has no jurisdiction. It clearly displays that it represents the Crown, yet the Crown has no legal force and effect in Canada. This means that anyone that was ever prosecuted in such court is actually prosecuted in the wrong court. This also means you have the right to challenge income tax, and you also have the right to challenge any legal proceeding that has been perpetrated against you in an act of fraud. Fraud doesn't have an expiration date. Of course, that again is based on the law, and since we're operating under Queen's law, to express that point, but the Queen's law has no force and effect in Canada. Canada is in effect now operating under common law. The courts would never have you believe that. Every time you get hauled into court, they try to haul you into a statutory court operating on some fictitious law or fictitious statute. The next thing that happens is we have the Belfort Report of 1926. This was an important document in Canada's evolution to become a fully self-governing nation. The report declared that Britain and the Dominions were constitutionally equal. This finding of the report was made law by British Parliament in 1931 and is known as the Statute of Westminster. This was the legal founding document of the modern Commonwealth in Canada and how it remained linked to Britain politically. But the legal power had shifted decisively into Canada, the Canadian Parliament, and the Prime Minister. This shift quickly led to an independent Canada, and that's why we have foreign policy, and to the creation of diplomatic services. It took several decades before Canada assumed all of its other powers under this statute. And this is partly due to the fact that the various provinces of Canada had not yet signed on to become the Dominion of Canada. There was a number of other factors as well. The Statute of Westminster 1931 is an act of Parliament of the United Kingdom that sets the basis relationship between the Commonwealth realms and the Crown. Passed on the 11th of December 1931, the statute increases the sovereignty of the self-governing dominions, of which Canada is one of them, and the British Empire from the United Kingdom. It also bound them to seek each other's approval for changes to the monarchical title and the common line of succession. The statute was effective either immediately or upon certain ratification. It thus became a statutory embodiment of the principles of equality and common allegiance to the Crown as set out in the Balfour Declaration of 1926. As the statute removed nearly all of the British Parliament's authority to legislate for the Dominions, it had the effect of making the Dominions largely sovereign nations in their own right. It was a critical step in the development of the Dominions of the separate states. This can be seen if we look at the initial documents that I produced quite some time ago, where we have different countries that are part of the British realm, Canada being one of them, Australia being one of them. Each one makes its own separate laws. Therefore, the Crown has very little to do with anything. And in fact, as I stated earlier in this presentation, the acts of government, when they say they're operating under the Crown or R versus somebody, R represents Regina, the Queen, which means the entire court system in those places, and specifically within Canada itself, are in fact void. Now, I said earlier the Lieutenant Governor representative for the British monarch doesn't sign into laws. This has been confirmed. You can see a picture of her here, and she was a very wise woman. She said in one of her speeches, she was basically removing herself from any sort of liability. She admits that she did not sign any laws, and neither does the Queen who she represents. Why is this? Because the laws are repugnant to common law and the Bible, and also would be contrary to the laws I expressed in the previous slides. Therefore, the Queen has nothing to do with Canada, and the entire legal system based on the monarch, which is self-evident when you walk into almost every courtroom, there's a big monarch seal at the front of the room. This is also why our laws do not receive royal assent. And if they don't receive royal assent under the British system, they're null and void. That would fall under the Great Seal Act, if you want to look that up. As such, Canada is truly sovereign. So, the Lieutenant Governor said as head of state, "I have the same mandate as Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth, the Queen of Canada, that is to say, that she has the same powers for democratic governance. Thus, the magistracy is the Queen, is supposed to be the head of state, while the Governor General is de facto head of state, and neither is in command of provincial or territorial jurisdiction. The head of state, however, is the CEO of the province and is required to sign all state documents in the name of the people to render them into law, but neither her nor the Queen signs them. Okay? She exonerated herself from this whole scam of any sort of liability. What she said in her speech was, "I'm supposed to be sending these documents into law, but I am not. Therefore, there is no law." I have now shown you here on this slide an excerpt of the actual speech. And you can see I've circled the appropriate sections are circled. What does all this mean? Why is the Queen not signing anything into law? Because they're repugnant to common law and the Bible. The Queen representative was also not signing them either. So tax laws are not tax laws. Courts are not courts. They only exist inside the Hudson's Bay Charter. Okay? The minute you step into a common law jurisdiction or a higher jurisdiction, they don't apply. The full liability would land on the Queen and the Lieutenant Governor General in commerce law jurisdiction. Commerce law is basically contract law. So there is no contract between you and the Hudson's Bay Company, and the whole act was done in fraud anyway. So under common law, any act that's in fraud is null and void. And one can't be compelled to participate in an act of fraud. I mean, that's just wrong. And that's wrong on a Bible type level. The fraud doesn't end though. Okay? The next thing that happens is Pierre Trudeau was on the stage and he was trying to rectify this issue and trying to revive the B&A Act in an effort to give Canada a status as a country or a legitimate parliament and have a constitution, the ability to make its own laws and govern itself. The problem was he had to call on an act of a different name. He couldn't reuse the B&A Act because that was virtually dead. And so what he did was he created the Constitution Act of 1982. But that didn't work either. Okay? Trudeau then tried to make this Constitution Act of 1982 by adding a charter and a Bill of Rights and Freedoms. Now, because we had no legal government in Canada, they had no legal right to make that law, right? How can one person or group of people in Ottawa make a law for a country which doesn't exist? Particular interest from the Queen's proclamation basically states that under this Constitution, Section 59 of the Constitution of 1982 would have to be met. And that Section 59 of the Constitution also refers to Section 23 of the Constitution Act of 1982. What is the Constitution Act of 1982 contingent upon? It's contingent upon Section 59 and Section 23 being passed. This is the language issue. So the people of Quebec would have to agree that in their province, children may be educated in any language their parents desire. And this isn't likely to happen. It was never put into law. It was never agreed upon as far as the Constitution goes. So therefore, Canada doesn't have a constitution, which means every province in Canada is technically separate and independent. There is no Canada, which also means there is no court. They will not sign off on this language law, and the Queen knew it. Therefore, Section 59 and 23 are a condition of the Constitution of 1982 coming into force. In fact, if we look back in history, the province of Quebec, in fact, had language laws that if you posted an English sign outside of your business, then you would be fined. So they were enforcing their law in their land. Therefore, if we look back in history, we can see that this Constitution doesn't apply. And if it was to apply as a country, it would have to apply to all provinces, not just a select few. This here is the Proclamation of Patriation of 1982. This is the document which is our Constitution and also applies certain rights. But for the most part, there it is. And you can see in the lower left-hand corner, it's actually received a legal seal, yet it's not legal. As I said, this didn't happen. The Queen's magic words basically fix it so that those two actions have to be met. And the government tried to revive this through the Meech Lake Accord of 1987 and the Charlottetown Accord of 1992. Both failed. So no matter what anyone says about Canada's Constitution, it is sitting in limbo, subject to Section 59 and Section 23. So there has to be another proclamation. And this has to be repealed or disappeared. So everything that Trudeau tried to do didn't come into force because Section 59 and Section 23 weren't met. This brings us back to the original charter of the Hudson's Bay Charter. And the one who owns the Hudson's Bay Charter is, to my understanding, Queen Elizabeth or someone in her family or someone she sold it to. When she mentions the words Canada in her proclamation, she's not talking about the country. She's talking about what was Canada back then, which is the Hudson's Bay Corporation. Whoever owns the royal charter of that corporation owns all the resources, the licensing and the fees and fines and taxes, which are extorted from the men and women in Canada in falsehood. Here we can see an HBC, Hudson's Bay Company, IOU. What does this mean? It means the Constitution Act shall be again subject to Section 59, and I've shown you a screenshot to clearly demonstrate this. Subject to Section 59, this act shall come into force on the day fixed by proclamation issued by the Queen or Governor General under the Great Seal of Canada. Well, Section 59 hasn't been met. There is no Constitution in Canada. In fact, there is no Canada. Now, if we read further, Constitution Act of 1982, it says here, paragraph 23.1a shall come into force in respect to Quebec on a day fixed by proclamation issued by the Queen or Governor General under the Great Seal of Canada. So they're telling you it shall come into force. Well, it's not in force. The proclamation under Section 1 shall be issued only were authorized by Legislative Assembly or the Government of Quebec, telling you that Quebec has to sign on. This section may be repealed on a day under paragraph 23A, comes into force in respect to Quebec, an act amend or recumbered. So they're telling you right there, it doesn't exist. And it would have to be sealed under the Great Seal of Canada, so all the provinces of Canada would in effect have to agree that section could be removed. And why would that happen? That would mean they would have preferential treatment, which would be unfair and unjust and basically illegal. If we go back to our Constitution Act, we can look here and we can look and find out that the British North American Act in section or item 19 and item 20, item 22, item 23, and item 24, the entire act was repealed. So if it was repealed, it means canceled. So therefore, the British North American Act has no legal force and effect in Canada. This presentation has been brought to you by Deny Truth, and we can be reached at denytruth@yahoo.com. The link following that is a link to a Telegram group where I have set up a general Telegram group called Deny Truth, and I've set up separate Telegram groups, one for Canada, one for the United States, and one for the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom one is further divided into specific subject areas, and the others will follow shortly. We also are setting up a denied-truth.com website, and here you will find resources and other documents which will be beneficial to anyone who is trying to take on the challenges of the local government. It won't be restricted to Canada or the United States, but it will be subdivided into different sections and different groups to further help people in their quest for justice. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this presentation. This presentation is a slightly updated version from the one I posted earlier. Thank you for your time.